From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in January 2015 when Governor Andrew Cuomo announced the creation of what is now called RMAPI, the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative. At that time and in the ensuing years, RMAPI leaders had a goal of reducing poverty by 50% in 15 years. About a third of Rochester's residents live in poverty, and the city is the third poorest major metropolitan area in the country. The plan to fight poverty included setting up a task force to identify the challenges people face when it comes to finding jobs, housing, and services. Those findings would inform the work to be taken on by the local governments and nonprofit groups. But 4 years later, as reported by WXXI's Veronica Volk this week, RMAPI leaders are reframing the initial idea and the scope of their work. Dr. Leonard Brock, RMAPI's executive director, told WXXI News, quote, an expectation shouldn't be 50% in 15 years. That should be an aspirational goal that we work toward, end quote. He and his colleagues are now looking at a longer period, and they are struggling to correct misperceptions about what RMAPI is and what it does. He says those misunderstandings have led to some false expectations of the poverty initiative and then some perceptions of failure early into this process. This hour, we're joined by Dr. Brock and community leaders for a conversation on RMAPI, what it is, what it is not, and what it can realistically accomplish in the coming years. It's a conversation that comes on the heels of a recent census report that concluded that poverty increased in the city of Rochester between 2013 and 2017. Our guests for the hour include our colleague Veronica Volk, who is behind that reporting series. Nice to have you in studio. Thanks.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Dr. Leonard Brock, executive director of RMAPI. Dr. Brock, nice to have you back here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Jamie Saunders, president and CEO of the United Way here. Jamie, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Isabel Barter is a community member who served on an RMAPI working group. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And with us is Tyrone Reeves, owner of True Form Manufacturing and leader of the Young Adult Manufacturer Education Program. Tyrone, welcome to you.
Thank you.
A brief hello from producer Megan Mack on the final day of our winter membership campaign. Hello, Megan.
Hello. If you've been waiting to become a member of WXXI, you cannot wait any longer because we are running out of time. And I will say we had a very big morning, but we have to duplicate what we did that morning to meet our goal this afternoon by 6 o'clock. So if you call 454-6300, you can help us continue these kinds of conversations on Connections. We're able to follow up and expand on the series that Veronica worked on that aired all week. And that's a luxury of public radio. We have more time than they do on commercial stations to tell stories, to have in-depth conversations with community leaders such as those joining us in studio for an entire hour. If you value that, if you value Connections, if you value Veronica's work, 454-6300, go online to WXXINews.org and support your public radio station.
All right. Thank you, Megan. I want to ask Veronica at the outset here, as a reporter who worked on this for weeks now, when did you start the process here?
I think I was first looking at RMAPI when the poverty report came out over the summer. So it might have been September-ish, and I kind of looked into it in earnest over the last couple weeks.
I recall a conversation with Ed Doherty, who wrote the initial poverty report back in 2013, 2014, about, you know, the early days of RMAPI. And one of the things that somebody called in and asked, you know, what's one thing that we can do over the next year to get this done? And Ed said, the one thing you can do is not ask what's one thing that will change everything in 1 year. You know, that this is a process that will take time. And as a journalist and as someone who wants to measure success, particularly when public dollars are involved and when something as important as poverty is involved, you want benchmarks, but you also want to be realistic and leave time to breathe. Mm-hmm. So give me the sense of what your goal was here as you set out to report on this.
Well, I was at the initial meeting with Kathy Hochul back in March of 2015. And I remember I had just started working here at the time, and it was a very emotional public announcement. There were a lot of community leaders there, a lot of people who were living in poverty there. And I think, like a lot of other journalists covering it, were really taken in by this goal of 50% in 15 years. Think about what a difference that would make for the city. So when the poverty report came out this summer, showing that poverty had actually increased, you know, very incrementally, and obviously looking at the census data, it was taken in a time frame that was before RMAPI was installed.
Yep.
I was still a little bit, you know, confused. If we had this huge goal, how are we actually moving backwards? Shouldn't we be making some kind of incremental progress in, you know, the right direction? So I talked to people over the last couple weeks and, you know, really just tried to get a sense of, for me, what is RMAPI? Because I think 4 years later, I still didn't really have a total understanding of what it was and what it was not and what it was responsible for and what we could and who we could hold accountable for moving the needle on poverty in Rochester.
Yeah. Dr. Brock, you have never said, don't hold us accountable, don't measure this, but you have called for patience on this. So,
yes.
When do we start to feel like we need to see that poverty number changing in the right direction?
Yeah, so population level outcomes takes time. There are a significant number of families that are actually receiving support today, which was evident in some of the reporting with the adult mentoring and even some of the persons participating within the job training that we're helping to get employed with the support for the program that Tyrone Reeve is going to share later. Mm-hmm. But there's three things to be mindful of. One, that before we can arrive at population change, there are two other phases. There's process changes, and that's the work we're doing now to engage as many people as possible so we can ensure that the work we're doing is informed. So the work of the early stages of our MAPI was more of a community assessment or a needs assessment to determine what can we do, how can we work together, how can we align, how can we change attitudes and beliefs so we can actually row in the same direction. Then you get at system changes. Those are policies and institutional practices that we look to change. And those things take time, and they also predate population changes. So even when you look at the work of poverty reduction or the census, the new census data that shared the 1% or the increase in poverty, there's two things to note. One, it predated our MAPI, like mm-hmm. Veronica made reference. And two, when you look at the catchment neighborhoods or the pilot neighborhoods that we were looking to permeate some of those practices, you actually did see a decrease in poverty. That's not to take credit. We can't take credit for the work that happened, but there was a decrease in the neighborhoods that our MAPI was focused on during those initial stages. So there's a lot of work that needs to happen. We should not expect to see population changes overnight. It's multimodal. There's many factors and many variables to consider, but this is something that we as a community need to hold ourselves accountable for being able to do.
I do want to drill in a little bit on some of what you're saying, Leonard, because I think that one of the reasons that I took so much time to report this is because people kind of get confused when you say things like population changes and systems changes. You know, that's why people latch on to the 50% in 15 years, because that is a right. tangible thing that people can wrap their minds around and like really grasp. So I think what you're talking about there is like the three-step kind of change that you were telling me about. So maybe you could explain that a little bit.
Absolutely. So process changes are the things in which we're doing now, getting everyone around the table. So there's over 80 institutions that are involved in our MAPI's work. So being able to keep people at the table, align and coordinate the various practices, and it's not doing more of the same. It's not finding programs that we can continue to support, but how are we changing how programs are coordinated, how they're aligned, and how we're communicating what we're doing in reference to that container of work. So those are process changes. System changes, we're talking about policies. So specific policies, for example, the housing discrimination legislation that was endorsed by our MAPI's early work. That's an example of systems change. When you look at the poverty impact statement, incentivizing companies that are receiving support from the Regional Economic Development Council and a large investment that New York State has put into this work, those are system changes. Same thing with the Genesee Brewery and the Clearwater Organic Farms. Those were system changes because they were incentivized to hire people impacted by poverty, and that was the result of legislation and policies that came out of our MAPI's early work. Those system changes will hopefully lead to population changes when you see people impacted by poverty, the number of people impacted by poverty decrease. When you see the percentage of poverty reduction, and you start to see those population level outcomes start to, you know, generate some positive results.
All right, a couple of points there. I was maybe a couple of years ago, and I want to say it was someone like Henry Gibbs from the city who was on the program. Sorry, Henry. Henry was on the program talking about, I think, what you just mentioned, which is starting neighborhood by neighborhood, mm-hmm. not starting population level, but starting targeted to see if some of these ideas can work.
Right.
And I think what I'm hearing from you is yes, as Veronica mentioned, 2013 to 2017, overall poverty increased a little bit. But in those areas that you're targeting, it actually decreased.
It actually decreased when you look
at the data. So there's a sign that something is working early on.
Yes, but that's not to take credit for it.
Okay, I'm with you.
Yes.
But there is at least some good indicators. Okay, I take that point. The other point, though, that I think really hits me hard from Veronica's reporting, Dr. Brock, and I know people latched onto it, but when you say, hey, 50% in 15 years has got to be aspirational, it feels like we've moved the goalpost a little, and I feel like I'm a little deflated. And should I be? Is that wrong to feel that way?
Yes, I think whether it's 50% or 100%, the goal here is we want everybody to have an opportunity to improve their lot in life. So if a family or a household would like to be self-sufficient, there should be no barrier. They should have every opportunity. So be it 100%. We want to eliminate poverty. The goal should always be to get as many people out of poverty as possible. So I don't think that we retract from that aspiration or that goal. We continue to support 50% poverty reduction, but it should be the responsibility of everyone. And our MAPP is one of several system actors working to reduce poverty. You have a plethora of other system actors that's working to address the issues of poverty reduction, and that should be a community goal. So we're not backing away from that, but the expectation, it was one around level setting expectations. If in fact, let's just say we didn't reduce poverty by 50% in 15 years, Evan, and let's just say we reduced poverty by 20%, that still will be considered progress, and that still should be considered success. I just don't want to set us up, if we don't meet the 50% benchmark, to say, well, nothing has happened, or what has happened actually didn't work or it fell.
Okay. I take that point. Veronica, do you feel like as we look at sort of the benchmarks that we've got a good framework to understand what's working?
I'm not sure, honestly. I think that, it's been 4 years since the announcement. I know it hasn't been 4 years since the actual, implementation of our MAPPY. But my question is, we need something. I mean, we journalists need something. We need some benchmark. Is it 20%? Is it 10%? Is it 1%? How many years? And I know that it's going to take time, but otherwise, how are we supposed to know that this kind of thing is working?
Right. And there are benchmarks. We do have goals. We do have things that we're working towards. For example, in the first 5 years, 2015 to 2020, to achieve the process goals, that's recruiting and retaining coalition members who are actively engaged in the work. There's developing consensus around those coalition members as it relates to the common agenda, which is the refined focus for our MAPPY around workforce development and basic needs. It's also getting specific commitments from those organizations that are part of our MAPPY. And we have a significant number of action commitments to date. There's also the systems mapping that's taking place, and also the support for systems integration. So those are things that we're doing within the five-year period. Once we get into phase two, which is systems integration, we're looking at those policies and those learnings from the early stages of our MAPPY so we can implement those changes. So there are benchmarks, there are outcomes that are associated with the work. There's no lack of accountability. It's just we should not expect to see a 15% poverty goal, 50% poverty reduction in the next year or two, which was the expectation at one point. Because I could recall there was an article that was written shortly after the announcement that here we are months later and nothing has happened. That's not realistic.
Right.
That's not.
No, I think there's probably agreement on that.
Sure.
But if poverty is down 5% in 15 years, is that a success or failure?
So I'll say this. If you look at benchmark communities, look what Hartford. Hartford was one of the leading communities in poverty above Rochester. So within 10 years, Hartford was able to reduce poverty by 10%. In my opinion, that's considered good progress. There's poverty reduced by 10% over 10 years. Would I consider that a failure? It's moving in the right direction. It's trending in the right direction. And that's the intent with our MAPPY, is for us to trend in the right direction. So I wouldn't call it failure. If we continue to do what we've done in the past, what IBM projected is that we will continue to see poverty increase. Mm. So anytime we could turn the curve and see poverty actually poverty decreasing as opposed to increasing, that's something we need to celebrate as a community. Because if we continue to do what we've been doing, in which, just look at one or two, let's just say, programs or projects that will be the answer for poverty reduction, what we've seen in the past is that poverty continued to increase.
This hour is going to fly. And listeners, what I want to do is kind of set it up so you know what's coming here, because we're going to try to fit a lot in here. First of all, Veronica Volk's reporting has generated a lot of feedback, and we'll talk about what some of that feedback has looked like and where it's come from in this community. And we have other guests here who are going to talk about their participation in some of what the Anti-Poverty Initiative has been trying to do, their experience with that. Before we get there, though, I want to ask both Dr. Brock and Jamie Saunders to help maybe illuminate a little bit more for our listeners what I think Veronica and her reporting did really well, which is keying in on what people misunderstand. And Dr. Brock, I know that's frustrating because people literally think you're getting a lot of money. But and I don't mean to make light of that, because it's been frustrating. But what do you think people misunderstand the most? And then I'll turn it over to Jamie to kind of talk about United Way's role here.
I think There's a few opportunities. So the misunderstanding, yes, was centered around some of the funding, and also that RMAPI was an organization solely responsible for reducing poverty. RMAPI is a coalition. There are multiple organizations engaged in the work, and there are multiple organizations doing good work to reduce poverty. And it's more of a process of changing what we've done in the past, how we think about poverty, how we respond to the data related to poverty, and how we act as institutions responsible for turning the curve as it relates to poverty. As it relates to funding, there has been significant amount of funding to support poverty reduction. That money does not come through United Way, all of it, or even to our MAPI, but those are investments. So I don't want to say that there hasn't been investments. There are really good investments as it relates to supporting poverty reduction, and that should continue. But those are not dollars that I manage, or those are not dollars that, you know, all dollars that any one particular coalition member manage. So that was the one of the biggest misperceptions that I had to mitigate in the early stages, is what are you doing with all the money? That was the number one question I was asked. What are you doing with the money?
But that's not an unreasonable question for the public to want to track the dollars, right?
It's not an unreasonable question at all.
Okay, so you're just trying to communicate, I'm not getting the money.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Jamie, you want to grab that microphone and kind of add to of where the money does go and how we can kind of get a handle on where it's going, how it's being used here.
Yeah, and I'd like to just start and thank you for allowing the opportunity for more of a deeper dive, because as you can just hear in Dr. Brock and in the reporting that Veronica had put forward, this is complex and entangled, mm-hmm. and we didn't just get here overnight. This is, you know, candidly decades, centuries to get us into this state. We didn't just end up as one of the most impoverished, segregated communities. So we have to really look at it that way. I was there in 2015. It was an emotional announcement from the lieutenant governor. And I would say it was emotional because it was finally like, let's do something. You know, we are a community that makes great things happen. And yet, how is it possible? This is my hometown. How is it possible that we are not rallying to change that more than half of our children live in poverty? Mm-hmm. Like, this should be unconscionable. This should be a rallying cry. So it was a moment. I participated in the early working groups when I was running Willow Domestic Violence Center and talking about safe neighborhoods, and really we talked about the trauma and making sure that we were addressing a lot of these undercurrent issues. I would just offer, in this seat at United Way, what I have been able to witness is the incredible power of the not-for-profit partners who are in this work. United Way has been in this space working to candidly mitigate poverty, because it is broader than one organization and no one institution can solve it, and we can't serve our way out of it. So the wonderful, hardworking not-for-profit organizations and partners are doing exactly what they should be doing, and they are helping people in the here and now. But we as a community have to operate in a different way. And we can talk about the goals, we can talk about moving the goalposts, and we definitely don't want to be deflated. The question is, why do we need this aspirational goal? I think we all do. We all want something to strive for and to feel like we can make a difference and make an impact. But this is not a spectator sport. So it's not just for the journalists who need the numbers, or United Way needs the number, or New York State needs the number. We have to figure out, how can all of us find a way to contribute to help move the needle? And it will take all of us. And it isn't just Dr. Brock. It isn't just United Way. It isn't just the fabulous programs that are happening in our community. It has to be true ownership and accountability in a broad sense. The misconceptions, I would say, is this collective impact is the model. It is focused on institutions in other communities where they have seen Hartford's an example, others across the country. It's taken a good 7+ years just to get a structure. Think of a startup. RMAPI was a startup under bright spotlights with the amount of individuals and working groups. About 2,000 plus of us were involved in the early days. And just think about that organizationally, of those of us who work in groups, work in volunteer groups, can candidly work, you know, in our own businesses. It takes a lot to move people, especially with passion and heart. And I will say, I feel a deep sense of urgency, because we know the families need it now and the individuals are struggling in the here and now. We also know that we can't just continue the way we've been. It will continue on the trajectory that we all see. So how do we have these uncomfortable conversations, hold up the mirror institutionally, and as well as on the public policy level? That's where we can make huge, huge changes to really help move people forward.
What is an example of a change that you've either seen that the United Way has had to make, mm-hmm. an agency's had to make, or city government that illustrates that beyond just sort of an idea that we have to make changes.
Yeah, and I'll do it just on the United Way to speak for it, and I would think Dr. Brock can share some very concrete examples, because a lot of things have happened that don't tie back to RMAPI to get credit for RMAPI, but that's the intent. Collective impact is collective ownership. And I keep reflecting back to Dr. Brock, we almost have to raise the flag a bit so people have more confidence and people don't give up, which this beautiful town has a tendency to give up and try something else, and we have to have staying power, especially when it gets messy and hard. I would say United Way, so we're the fiscal agent. What that means is we host our MAPI. We're very proud to do that. But then we are a participant as one of the 80-plus organizations. So we don't drive it anymore or lead it anymore than any of the other institutions. That said, we looked at our own grant making. We looked at our own requirements, particularly around how are our not-for-profits addressing structural racism? How are they addressing underlying trauma? How are they including community voice? And so in our seat, we could say, let us share and lift this sector who are doing wonderful work on the day-to-day, but how can we help them in their practices and behaviors? And we're doing that at United Way and looking at how we invest our resources, which we, I believe, are the people's charity. Similar to, I love that you're doing a drive, and we're here when XXI is doing its drive. You have thousands of people investing in WXXI to be that public voice, and that's what United Way is built on. People giving their hard-earned dollars to support a public service. And with that comes responsibility. And with that comes that we ensure that we are investing it in the most effective way. And we have to address the poverty epidemic that is plaguing our community. And that's what we are doubling down on.
All right. So a couple of things. I want to talk to Veronica about the fact that, and I see it, the phone's ringing. I know we've got some feedback, which we will get to in our second half hour. Veronica, As you know, there are all these different working groups, and I think Jamie mentioned, 2,000 people involved from the outset here. So you can't interview every person who's been part of a working group.
Unfortunately, I cannot.
You cannot. But you also can't include everything in your reporting that you uncovered over these weeks and months of reporting. What you did include was some commentary from some people who have been involved. That's why Tyrone's here. Also, Isabel Barter's here. Mm-hmm. Give me a sense for what some of the feedback you've heard about people who've tried to get ideas moving forward.
So I'm going to let Isabel speak for herself, but I will say that my conversation with you is really one of the things that helped me really understand kind of the disconnect between public perception of RMAPI and the reality of RMAPI. Because for me, these working groups, the intent was to come up with recommendations, and then they were going to happen. And I think, or at least that's kind of like what I think the community thought. And I'd really love to hear about, you know, your experience and what you thought was going to happen as well.
I've just been kind of mulling this over, listening, and I've been thinking a lot about what our expectations were from the onset, and it's been interesting to hear kind of the perceptional differences on an organizational level and from the community. But so you were talking about collective community accountability, community responsibility. You know, we're all in this together, a sense that we're all in this together. But that only makes sense to me anyway when there's collective community control of the programs that are being shaped and they're being motivated to help the community. So, you know, those in poverty should have some kind of democratic control over the means to get themselves out of poverty. I thought that's what our MAPI was. The funds are there. I think most people agree that the funds are there. But for one reason or another, they're not able to actually get into the communities and make the differences that they're supposed to. Mm-hmm. So people feel powerless to change their situation. There's a lot of reasons for that. I think a lot of them are being addressed by RMAPI, and I think there's been a lot of progress to talk about, systemic racism, to talk about, the different barriers that people have. But for one reason or another, there are barriers, systemic barriers, that get in the way of people changing their situation. Mm-hmm. The reason that I was so excited about RMAPI, the reason that I got involved at all, was because I thought that this was going to be an organization, a strategy, a coalition that took community control very seriously and actually drove into policy and into funds allocation this community control.
Right.
Yeah.
That was one of the founding tenets I also was hearing a lot about in the beginning of our MAPI, was this: we are going to be very sure to include people who are living in poverty, people who are affected by poverty, people who are in the community. And that's what this is really about.
Yeah, I just wanted to pipe in here real quick and then toss it over to Dr. Brock. Couldn't agree with you more. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it different, I think, in terms of RMAPI, is that extensive engagement process and actually having a formal structure to have community voice. Mm-hmm. I also wanted just to share, in terms of a misperception of RMAPI, is that it actually started with one staff, and it just has grown to more. So be that one staff and 2,000 supported and committees and structures, and it was very much volunteer-led. I am so thrilled that this community is supporting RMAPI in a broader scale to see if we're going to do this for real, if we're going to actually focus on communication and correcting misperceptions, which in the absence of information, we fill it in. You know, I will say before I was in the working groups as well, and I kept saying, I would see Leonard out, and I said, what's happening with RMAPI? We spent all this time together, but he was an army of one. And now it's grown, there's a structure, and there's some really great things happening. And just last night was an incredible win that was very tangible that I would love if you could just share a bit.
Yeah, the participatory budgeting is exactly that, providing not necessarily ownership, but also involvement and a sense of empowerment for community members to engage in, you know, public processes that allow for public spending. So there were a number of projects that were awarded yesterday, and that was a complete community process where there were hundreds of people throughout the community. There were budget delegates, there were volunteers, and a significant number of persons that participated in the process to do exactly that. And there was dollars earmarked specifically for those community projects, and the energy in the room was just contagious last night.
Where did this happen? Win.
At Bating Street Settlement House on Clinton Avenue. And there was a significant number of persons that participated. Two staff persons in particular, who's responsible for the community engagement efforts, are RMAPI at this point in time, Lorianne Garambe and Graham Hughes. They are excellent. They did a phenomenal job organizing so many community leaders. And that's one example of how we try to continue to keep community voice within the context of RMAPI. The other thing is there's the Community Advisory Council. There are members of the Community Advisory Council, which is part of the structure, the governance structure, RMAPI, and these are individuals with the lived experience who are living in poverty that continuously inform the strategies that we're looking to employ. We have representation on the steering committee and all the other working group structures as well. So that's something that we've continued to do since the very beginning.
I was just going to add that, you know, I've been to a couple events that feature the participatory budgeting, you know, side of RMAPI. I think that the question that I have and the question that arose in my conversation with Isabel was, Isabel, you were in the housing group, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, the housing group came up with a couple specific recommendations. And you talked a little bit about some of the legislation that grew out of that. But a participatory budgeting is kind of soliciting ideas from the community when I feel like we have a list of ideas that came out of the working group. And what happened to them? Mm-hmm.
Yes, many of them were implemented, mm-hmm. and I had made reference to the legislation and some of the recommendations that came out of the housing work group. One of the challenges or the misperceptions is the branding. Mm-hmm. So persons are not looking at the legislation and saying that's an RMAPI policy. Mm-hmm. They're not going to, let's say, Genesee Brewery, some of the other partners saying this is an RMAPI job. So those recommendations are, in fact, being implemented from the adult mentoring pilot program that you interviewed, from the early childhood supports that we were able to fund, from the policy impact statement from the regional council, on Rochester, from van pooling. All those are projects that came out of those recommendations from RMAPI's early work that are being implemented. So the 33 recommendations are not ignored, nor did we say, you know what, that's a report that we're going to shelve. Those are recommendations that continue to inform the coalition members to this day that are in fact being implemented. Mm-hmm. How it's being communicated and how it's being branded probably is the challenge, but the work is taking place.
Do you think Isabel has given up too early, Dr. Brock?
I don't think Isabel's given up at all. I think the fact that Isabel is here, she's committed, she's dedicated, and I'm not trying to speak for Isabel, but I think
I can speak for myself.
Okay.
It's not that I've given up. I mean, I've lived in Rochester almost my entire life. You know, I just turned 30. I'm a little ashamed to admit, although maybe proud to
don't
admit.
Don't be honest.
proud to admit. And I deeply love this community. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents still live on Lyle and Murray. I'm from it, you know? And I think that a lot of us who've grown up in this community, you know, we look at Rochester and we see all of the problems that are happening in Rochester, and we're not saying to ourselves, how can somebody else fix this for me? We're saying to ourselves, how can we fix this? And a lot of times we're saying that with the understanding that the resources that used to get used by other people to fix it for us now have to be in our hands so that we can fix it for ourselves. And that's what I'm looking for. That to me will be the tangible change that will get me re-excited about our MAPI. I'm not saying that I'm not. I think that, you know, Doc Brock's been doing a really great job. And I think a lot of people do recognize that. But we need to see the ship start to get steered to clearer waters. That's what we need to see.
Is that fair, Dr. Brock?
That is fair. That is absolutely spot on, and I couldn't agree more. There's nothing I could even add to that. I do want to talk about something we're doing now specifically as it relates to helping people get employed. Our MAPI has two priority areas right now, too, which is we are contributing to poverty reduction by focusing on workforce development and basic needs. We're also helping people impacted by poverty, not by just involving their voice in creating a democratic process so they could be responsible for some community spending, but also getting persons trained and getting persons actually employed. And Tyrone Reeves is here to talk about YAMTAP and some of the work we're doing, which is part of the Our MAPI container, and we're supporting that work. So I would love to.
All right, so Tyrone, let's do that on the other side of our break because okay. I'm late for it.
Okay.
And I gotta.
He's gonna get in trouble.
I could. It's actually gonna happen. So we're gonna turn to Tyrone for that. Then, your phone calls and emails on this subject as we try to understand not just what's going on with our MAPI, but piggybacking off the great work that Veronica Volk has done for WXXI News this week. So let's get that break, and we're right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour. A conversation about why religion can unite us and why sometimes it divides us. You might have seen the story last month from WXXI News on the arrest by Greece police of a number of individuals who had plotted an attack on a community called Islamburg in the Catskills. Next hour, a conversation about interfaith studies and dialogue, construction, not destruction. Next hour. Welcome back to Connections. In 30 seconds or less, I'm going to try to tell you why I want you to call, not necessarily the show line, but for right now, I want you to call our volunteers at 454-6300. I want you to call because this is the final day of our winter membership campaign. We're still significantly short of our goal, but we've got a chance to get there before the end of the day. And we try every day to bring community leaders, voices like Dr. Brock, Jamie Saunders, and also the people who are working at the ground level, people like Isabel. There's so many people who you're going to hear their voices all throughout the year in hour-long conversations, not 30-second sound bites, not what you see in different formats there, but right here at length with your voice too. I know you support that, and now we need you to become a member, probably for the first time, and that's great. 454-6300, WXXINews.org. Please donate whatever is a fair contribution for you to make, and there is a challenge for the next 20 minutes or so. Darby Thomas has been a member since 1982. So thank you, Darby, matching every single dollar for the next half hour. So there you go. Please do that. Okay, so I want to turn now to Tyrone Reeves, who's the owner of Trueform Manufacturing, leader of the Young Adult Manufacturer Education Program, which is what, Dr. Brock? By the way, if you're just joining, you're going, what are we talking about? It's our MAPI, the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, trying to understand where things are and following the great reporting of Veronica Volk this week. Tell us about the program briefly, and then we're going to talk to Tyrone about it.
Yes, it's one of the efforts to help individuals in the community get the skill training they need to actually receive employment. There are a significant number of persons who lack the opportunities or lack the skill training, and as a result, they're not employed or they're not gainfully employed. So we are working with Tyrone to ensure that we're providing training for individuals who have the wherewithal and afforded to, individuals who aspire to receive an employment opportunity to get the necessary training. And it's also directly linked and tied to one of our MAPI priority areas of workforce development, the other being accessibility and affordability to basic needs.
Okay. Well, how's it going?
Fantastic.
Give me a sense for how you see the work, especially given the urgency that people are feeling. You're feeling it at this table. You're feeling it in feedback from the community. How's it going, Tara?
Well, I don't really get involved in the urgency. As a small business owner, my concerns have been just the same as every other small, medium, and large business. We don't have people. We don't have people who have the basic skills to do entry-level jobs. How are we going to fill middle-skilled jobs if we don't have low-skilled jobs that we can fill? So we kind of just went through, my team and I, and said, you know what? We can't find people. Let's not cry about it. Let's not complain about it. Let's just go start something. And I don't care if we help just one person. Let's see if we can train one person. We run a 12-week program, and that program is geared towards the issues we had with hiring people. And as we talk to other employers, they've had the same issues. People are late. They don't want to show up to work at all. Many don't have the basic skills. So I said, okay, we know this. Let's put together a program where let's see if we can get people to understand how important it is to be able to work on the basic things of showing up to work. Right. So we created the Young Adult Manufacturing Training Employment Program. And the sole basis for that program is one objective only. We're simple people. You come into our program, you'll go there for 12 weeks. At the end of 12 weeks, we put you to work. If we don't put you to work, we fail. That's our objective.
Where do they go to work? Because, and I ask this because, Tyrone, on this program, we've heard from Rochester Works, the Chamber of Commerce. Everybody's telling us, hey, we talk to companies, they can't fill skilled positions. And yet, every time that happens, we get people calling and going, come on, really? There's companies?
Yeah.
So where are people going to work?
Well, people like Rochester Works, they're one of our partners. So they help us with a lot of soft skill and interpersonal skills training. The city of Rochester, they're phenomenal. They help us with a lot of that same soft skills training. I sit on the board of the Chamber of Commerce, and we will be working with them as well. But many of our employers are companies like anywhere from very small businesses to very large. Wegmans hires some of our people. Genesee Brewery hires some of our people. But you have small companies like JOT Finishing and Accurate Painting and Coating and Pico Precision Products. We have quite a few employers, and they all say the very same thing. At this point in time, I bet you I have at least 60 or 70 requests for jobs. I mean, we got to a point, too, where and there are a lot of organizations around, and there's a lot of training, but no one seemed to be able to fill our basic needs. So that's what the AMTEP was designed to do.
How many people are going through AMTEP?
And of course, again, we don't measure really the numbers. But so far in about a 2.5 year period, we've put about 218 people through, of which we have approximately 150 or 60 that are in jobs.
Sounds like you measure the numbers.
We measure the people. We count who comes in.
Okay. Yeah.
But there are some cohorts. We run 3 cohorts a year. They're 12-week sessions. Some cohorts we may have 10 people. Some we may have 40.
Sure.
So we don't really get into the whole issue of numbers. We try to understand where can we collaborate with other community organizations that are training people and working with people so we can get more people into the program.
Yeah.
That is our biggest issue, getting people into the program. And that's kind of what our push is today. How do we figure out how to do that?
Okay.
So 218, you know, for those 218 people, that makes a huge difference. But it sounds like a relatively small number when you talk about the number of people who are unemployed in Rochester, the number of people who are living in poverty. Is YAMTAP as an example of a program that we are learning from in terms of like how we train people in Rochester, how we lift the community up as a whole and make our community more employable?
Well, YAMTAP is relatively new. And that's why we don't really get involved. I don't get involved a lot with the metrics. Right now, we try to understand, what are we doing? Is it working? Can we do more of it? And what do we need to adjust and change as the dynamics of the community change?
But is the ultimate goal to help people on a one-on-one basis? Or is it to learn from this kind of workforce development?
It's both. We look to help people on a one-on-one basis. That's why we bring in our community partners like a Rochester Works or Monroe County Social Services. So you can help people on a one-on-one basis. But the goal is also to see, okay, let's learn from this and let's see how do we expand it. All right. One of the things that I haven't done yet, and we're going to be doing that very soon, I haven't really gone off and really pulled the employers out there and said, okay, listen, we know you need to fulfill jobs. I don't want to do that just yet because if I don't have the people for them, you know, now you're going to create a different issue. So for us at YAMTEP, we're more concerned with step by step, one day at a time. We'll let Brock and those guys deal with 15 years, right? We're going to deal with this moment and see if, and we measure every cohort one at a time because each cohort, it's funny, I think we're in maybe our 10th cohort now. And every single cohort has been different the people who've come into that cohort and the issues that they've had have been very, very different. It's given me definitely a renewed respect for the people who work in the community, the Rochester Works and the Department of Social Services and the City of Rochester and the Pathstones and all these organizations, because I started Yamped Up and I figured, I can just go out and pluck some people off the street, and this person said, yep, they want a job. Great, we can just start working with them right now. Yeah, I was sadly mistaken. It's not that simple of a problem.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to get some feedback, if we could, from listeners, because we've got a lot to work through. So let's do this. We're going to start with Joan in Brighton. Go ahead, Joan.
Hi, can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Go ahead, Joan.
Okay. I assume that RMAFI is putting some system structures in place in order to start initiatives which can begin to show progress in lowering poverty rates. I'm thinking of connected communities, which I have some knowledge of, which seem to be doing a lot of things to get the community together to move forward. Could you discuss that effort and tell me how it's showing some progress?
Sure. Thanks, Joan, for that.
Yeah, LaShonda Leslie Smith is actually one of the steering committee members for RMAPI, and connected communities, you know, is directly linked or correlated with the work of the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative. There's a significant amount of work taking place as it relates to the community schools project and the feeder program that they're working on with 33 and East, and there's a number of things they're doing around housing, and as well as getting input from people in the community. So we work hand in glove with LaShonda. LaShonda would be a good person to probably have on Connections or to interview, because I think that the work she's doing within the two neighborhoods of Emma and Beachwood, which are the neighborhoods RMAPI's target areas, is showing some significant improvements, like I made reference earlier, with the poverty reduction in those neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to chime in, because I just have to say, I went to see YAMTEP. So Tyrone's being pretty modest here, and I got to tell you, it's a pretty incredible program, and he's a business owner. He's a business leader, and I think that speaks to all of us have a role. So it is the public sector and the nonprofit sector, as well as the business community, and all of us to step up and to figure out a way to address this. When we talk about 218 participants, those are households, those
right.
are families. That magnifies. And I think Connected Communities is a wonderful example of having a very specific high touch. I mean, LaShonda in the neighborhoods. It's high touch, person by person, meeting by meeting, kitchen table by kitchen table. And that's exactly what Tyrone's program is doing in terms of the trainings. What's different, I think, about the MTEP program is learning a manufacturing skill, learning warehousing skills, learning how to drive a forklift. It's amazing tangible skills in addition to the soft skills training, which many of our other wonderful partners do. And putting those together person by person, I believe, is truly a game changer, and we are learning from it. But I want to acknowledge that he is a business leader. He doesn't have to do this, but he found a business economic reason to participate, plus you are humanitarian, please.
Right.
But there's a way to look at this broader, and Connected Communities is exactly that as well, a focus program.
And right, and Tyrone, those are 200-plus households, and that's not to be minimized.
No.
So the progress is being made there, and that's the same conversation we're having around the goal of 50% poverty reduction. If you look at unemployment and you think that that's the answer for unemployment, then you shouldn't expect that. But we should acknowledge that those are 216 households, 200 plus households that are receiving support, that have training, that have employment, that didn't have it otherwise. And we have to celebrate that. We can't minimize it. So that's
my point, wasn't not to celebrate it at all. I think that's a victory for over 200 households. However, if you look at moving the needle on poverty in Rochester, where there are over 100,000 people living in poverty, it's a victory for sure. It's a small one, and it makes me wonder if we can expect systematic change by helping people on a one-to-one basis. There's just not enough people doing the helping.
It's a both end, but the howlers and the buts minimizes the importance of improving those 200 plus households. So it's a both end. There's learning that could permeate the system, but we also have to understand we have to help families today as we improve the system of tomorrow. So it's a both and, mm-hmm. not either.
All right, Dominic says, Evan, what can we that live in the suburbs do to be supportive of this initiative?
We need bodies in YAMTEP.
What else, Dr. Brock?
I think persistence and patience, obviously, which is on the softer side of the scale. But I do believe we can actually get people enrolled in the YAMTEP program. I think that's one. I think the coalition members have volunteer opportunities, so individuals want to contribute and participate in this process. There are many of opportunities to engage with the coalition members. And the other opportunity we have is to invite the community. So there's going to be a newsletter and a new website that RMAP is going to release the latter end of this month. And there's going to be a unique opportunity for people to contribute and also volunteer and be part of the newsletter in which they get information about RMAP and updates and ways that they can contribute and ways they can stay informed. So.
Well, I think that's a great thank you for whoever it was.
Dominic.
Dominic, thank you for asking that. And also it sheds the light on this. RMAP is not just focused on the city of Rochester. So there is suburban poverty that needs to also be part of the fold. And there are incredible not-for-profit partners throughout this community and county that need support. So to be a part of RMAP in the broadest sense about poverty reduction is to support those incredible agencies. So volunteering, that could be at your food shelf, that could be calling the WXXI line because this is all part of it. It is to ensure that our structures are strong and solid. And so there are ways that each of us, if it's on your lunch hour reading at School 17, if it is volunteering on your boards and those leaders, that's absolutely a way to get engaged and to stay engaged. There'll be more opportunities forthcoming.
And then there's three opportunities to do something right now. One, get people enrolled in the YAMTEP. Two, get people enrolled in YAMTEP. Three, get people enrolled in YAMTEP.
I see where you're going. I knew you were going with that by the first one. Kate writes to us and says, Evan, give us some perspective. Has the number of people living in poverty increased because there are more people living in the city, or has the number of residents stayed stable but more of them are now poor?
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah. Has the number of people living in poverty increased because there are more people living in the city, or has the number of residents stayed stable, but more of them are now poor? I think it's the latter because the population of Rochester has declined technically.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's technically the latter. And she says, if it's the latter, why is that? Why is that more people are now poor than before?
Well, wages haven't kept up. So wages and jobs haven't kept up. So that's the economic drivers that we have to not ignore in this. So we are so focused in our conversation today, neighborhood by neighborhood, and starting with jobs. But the best, as you know, the best social program is a job and a well-paying job. And we're so focused on the poverty numbers, which candidly, it's the poverty level that we're talking about. All these numbers for a family of three is $23,000 a year. Right. How can you feed a family of three on $24,000 a year?
Right.
So it's almost a false notion of how we are thinking about this. It's much more significant for an incredible level set
but
for the community.
That sounds like an argument for systemic economic change. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds...
I thought that's
a whole other show.
Well,
a whole other show, but we can't just be, tinting, you know.
And it is what we're talking about, of course, right. Veronica, but that also says to me, it's sort of the argument that, well, can you improve schools without improving poverty? Chicken and egg. Can you improve poverty without changing an economic system?
I think that Leonard Brock would say that that's what our MAPI is doing. That's the point.
That's the intent. That's what we're working towards.
Okay. Tom says the Rochester, New York poverty rate is inching up instead of down because up to 80% of families in the city are single parent. No mention of this by our MAPI cheerleaders. Fair or unfair criticism?
It's fair. There's two target populations that RMAP is focused on: single female-headed households with children in the labor force. And the reason being is because 80% of children born and living in poverty reside in single female-headed households. So those are the two target populations for RMAP, although it's not exclusionary of other populations. Those are the two target populations that are current.
Jump in as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that makes a ton of sense to me because we live in a system that devalues the labor of women. I mean, women make less money. And so if you have a single female head of household, then you're going to have a household that has to deal with sexism in the workplace, perhaps has to deal with, if you're in Rochester, usually has to deal with racism in the workplace. And so, yeah, we do need to talk about these systemic changes because if you're not addressing sexism and racism and income going up as well, then you're not actually addressing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So if unemployment going down doesn't really make a difference unless wages are going up.
And Isabel, since I'm down in the last minute, I want to turn to you just for some final thoughts from you, mm-hmm. because you emerged in Veronica's reporting as not necessarily a critic per se, but as someone who has really invested a lot of energy and hope in this. And you want to see, and I think there's a lot of agreement on that. Mm-hmm. Do you emerge from this week, both the reporting, these conversations, more optimistic than you were? Or are you still concerned that you haven't seen progress and the ideas implemented?
That's a tough question. So I'm more optimistic that the ideas and the perspectives in place are the right ones. The problem for me is that I'm still not seeing those big overhaul changes. So, you know, for me, it's not just RMAPI saying the same thing that we were, well, that you know, RMAPI was saying, and that we who were involved in the initial process were saying right from the beginning, which is that we need systemic changes to see systemic changes. But I want to see all of these 80 organizations come out and say, these are the steps we're taking because RMAPI has changed our perspective.
Yes.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for sharing your perspective here and in Veronica's reporting for WXXI. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Our thanks as well to Dr. Leonard Brock, the Executive Director of the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Jamie Saunders, President and CEO of the United Way. Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks for having me.
Our thanks to Tyrone Reeves from Trueform Manufacturing and YamTep. That's it? YamTep. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Veronica Volk, where can we find the reporting series?
Our reporting is on the web at WXXINews.org, and you can also download it in podcast form. Search for Earshot wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. Thanks for being here, and thanks for the great work. All right, short break, more connections coming up.